This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hello, friends and neighbors. This is episode number 54 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
How much fun did we have last week? We had Patrick Sullivan on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Love him. And we also did our Patreon draft with some listeners who were nice enough to give to our Patreon fund. What did you guys think of that?
It was super fun.
It mm-hmm. was. I should have built better, though.
Katie, I think you had the best deck out of all of us. You were on like some black white allies amazing pile.
I was. It just kept like not working out, except against you, Erin. I think I only went 1-2. I think I lost my other two matches.
How did you go 1-2 with that deck? That deck had so much synergy, and you had like all the black white. I mean, that was like the black white ally dream right there.
It was kind of the definition of like gold standard allies, but
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I just couldn't really curve out appropriately any game, and I had to mull a few games, and it was just rough. It just didn't work out.
And I had a lot of fun. I think I got to play both of you.
You got to play all three of us, didn't you?
I did, yep. Yeah. I did. And then Hallie won the whole damn thing.
Yeah she did.
Those legacs.
But it was a lot of fun. You know, shout out to Erin, Kobe, John, and Addison for joining us at the very last minute. And if anybody else is listening, you can join us during our next draft. We're probably going to, you know, revisit it in a couple months, but you can always become a Patreon on patreon.com, and you can join us when we do bring it back. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Patreons and patrons, we have three new ones. We have our friend John, our friend Holly, and Eric. Thank you so much for sponsoring our show. Woman of Excellence this week is a woman named Sarah Maddock. Now, Sarah is somebody, I don't think Sarah actually plays Magic, but Sarah is a mom, and she recently visited GP Detroit with her two little girls, her twin daughters, who are big fans of Christine Sprinkle, and Sprinkle ignited the cosplay fire in them, and the little girls decided that they wanted to cosplay the Twins of Moror Estate. Which is a new card from Shadows Over Innistrad. It's a portrait of two twin girls who happen to be vampires. But they're very innocent looking girls. They're in these very beautiful blue dresses. They just happen to be covered in blood. The flavor text is great. And Sarah sent Christine a picture of her girls, and they dressed up like them for the pre-release.
That's awesome.
And I just thought that was incredibly cool that, you know, Sarah would be, you know, fine enough with her daughters just covering themselves in fake blood and going out in public. Like, no big deal.
The usual.
Right. And the picture got retweeted everywhere, got a lot of likes. And so kudos to Sarah for being cool and supporting her daughters in their cosplay goals. This past weekend, we got a chance to pre-release. Hallie, why don't you start us off? Because you were probably our marathon runner. You did your four, yeah?
I did my four.
Oh, my God.
Okay, and how did they go?
They went pretty well. I consistently went 3-1, and I consistently played green-white humans, which ended up coming together pretty well, even though this seems to be a high-synergy set, and high-synergy sets aren't always the best in sealed. I had a lot of really strong human interactions. The last deck that I had, which I posted on Twitter, had a Bygone Bishop, which is not actually a human, but he helps the humans find the clues that they need to solve the mysteries. He is a 2/3 flyer for 3, and whenever you cast a creature with converted mana cost 3 or less, you investigate, so you get a clue token. So I made so many clues, you guys. Like, I came so close to solving the mystery because I was making clues and sacking clues. And I even got to sacrifice a clue to flip my Pious Evangel, which is the 2/2 that gains you a life whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control. And on the other side, it's a 2/4 with the Zulaport Cutthroat ability. So that was pretty cool. I really liked the set. It was a lot of fun. I didn't get to play the original Innistrad, but it seemed like a lot of the archetypes or similar archetypes were there. Green-white humans is still pretty strong. Vampires still seemed really good. And yeah, I'm just really excited to draft this set.
There was a store on Twitter that was giving away copies of Curse of Exhaustion. to players that played in so many pre-releases throughout the weekend. And I think there were only like five or six people that had done that, that played just consistently throughout the weekend. And I was like, man, if Hallie was there, she would have earned that curse of exhaustion. And
there were two guys at my store who went to all six.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out to Chris and Justin because they went to six pre-releases and they were pretty exhausted by the end, but they seemed like they were having a lot of fun.
Man, that's what counts. I can't even imagine doing that. Like, just God bless them. Well, I'm glad to hear that you did sacrifice a lot of clues. I'm glad that you didn't have the clues blues.
Ooh. Oh, that's a pretty good one.
You are welcome. Katie, how was your pre-release?
So, I played our main event on Saturday, and we are doing a new thing where we have, like, a competitive pre-release and a casual pre-release, and the competitive pre-release has rounds and prizes based on attendance, and it's a cut to top eight with prize distribution, and then our casual pre-release is just four rounds, no matter how many players there are, and then they give away prizes based on your wins. So I did the competitive one, and I went 4-0-1 and drew into the top eight, and then we just split top eight. And my deck was pretty sweet. Six of my seven rares were in red and white, so I played red-white. I had two Gaia Reach Bandits, a Sin Prodder, Thalia's Lieutenant, Devil's Playground, which is an amazing card, and Odric, Lunark Marshal. So I basically just played a lot of dudes, and then I hit them. and surprisingly, the MVP of my deck that day was the white enchantment that gives +1/+1 for every creature that you control. Hope Against Hope. It's an enchantment. Get +1/+1 for each creature you control. And if the enchanted creature is a human, it has first strike. So in one of the games, I just, like, played Devil's Playground and a few creatures. And then I suited up a flyer and I just hit my opponent for 10 and then 11. And they were dead. So the deck was pretty sweet. I was happy with how it went. Sunday I played Two-Headed Giant with my friend Todd, and we only went 2-2. I think our decks were, like, pretty mediocre. We really didn't have very many bombs or anything, but we built a blue-white flyers deck, which was really powerful, and then a black-red aggro deck. And we just really didn't have... We had a lot of solid creatures, but nothing exciting. But between the two of us, we were playing, like, 19 removal spells or something, so we couldn't win, but we could make sure they didn't have any creatures. But overall, the weekend was really fun. I'm super excited. I think I'm going to try and draft the release draft this next weekend, which is just going to be Triple Shadows, and see how that goes, because I think it'll be a really fun draft set.
How did Sin Prodder work for you?
One game, it was super unimpressive, and I just kept missing lands. And then other games, it was really sweet. So it was kind of hit or miss.
Yeah, that's a card that people can't seem to agree on in terms of standard. Like, there are some people who think it's going to be amazing, and then there are people who think it's going to be crap. And I don't know, I think it kind of occupies that weird three mana, like that Courser of Kruphix kind of spot, where it's mm-hmm. like you've got that weird kind of stabilizer middle ground card that can, you know, kind of help you refuel your hand. And I don't know, I'm optimistic about it, as optimistic as I can be about a red card, but I think it's good. I think it's better than people are giving it credit for. I don't know if it will be, you know, if we're going on extremes, I don't know if it'll be amazing. But I don't think it's utter crap either.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
It's in a bit of a weird place because it's a 3-2 for 3, which you kind of want to put in an aggressive shell with, like, a lot of 1 and 2 drops. But at the same time, its ability makes it, you know, the kind of card that's good in a deck with a lot of higher costed things, a lot of higher costed creatures. So I'm not really sure what it's going to end up in.
Do you think it could play a role similar to, like, Outpost Siege, where it's like, you know, you were seeing those red-white decks in Standard that were, you know, boarding an Outpost Siege for those really long games? Like, do you think maybe it's a sideboard card where if you think the game is going long or you think you need to refuel your hand, that it's an option where it can be aggressive, but it can also get you some card advantage?
That's very possible. I mean, the thing about Outpost Siege was that it's an enchantment, and so, you know, control decks typically have an easier time dealing with creatures than enchantments, so I'm not sure if that comparison is too... I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the right comparison to make, but it could serve a similar role. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I feel like maybe it'll fit in, like, a mid-rangey red-green deck with, like, Arlen and something like that, just, like, a heavy value deck where every card you play kind of needs answered. Mm-hmm. And so it might be valuable in that because people, I think, are more willing to pay the life cost to get rid of things that they can't get rid of easily, like planeswalkers.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised to see how many people have said that Arlen is disappointing, that she's not living up to hype so far.
Mm. Oh, really? It seems like she's been good and limited so far, but that's all I've really seen of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been a number of posts by the pros who've been doing some testing for SCG Baltimore this coming weekend, and, you know, several of them have done the, like, you know, performed better than expected and performed, you know, worse than expected. And I think she's been on, like, most of the worst list. Oh. And it's just like, and it's not necessarily that she's bad, but, like, they just can't seem to find a home for her yet. Oh. And everything they try to jam her into just doesn't really fit.
That's a shame because she seems like a really cool character. And whenever I like a character, I want its card to be good, you know? So I would hope that she gets some time.
Speaking of Two-Headed Giant, Chris, you played Two-Headed Giant this weekend. And if I remember correctly, your first round opponent was very interesting.
He sits down to play against me and I was like, do you have double face cards in that deck? Because it was unsleeved. And he's like, yep. I'm like, I don't think you can do that. So I was like, go tell the judge. So then he gave us like an 8-minute time extension so that he could go and sleeve his deck. And then I just promptly like destroyed him and I felt kind of bad. But yeah, it was pretty funny. He was just kind of weird too because I was like making like my attacks and doing other stuff. And he was like on his phone. I'm like, attacking you? Activating this? Hello? And he was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then, like, after I beat him the first game, he was like, I'm so sorry to have wasted your time. I'm like, wait, what? I don't understand. We're related to pre-release. So it was kind of odd. But my singles event that I did before Two-Headed Giant was pretty cool. I ended up doing both events and going 2-2. I think I had a better pool for the singles event than I did for Two-Headed Giant. But there were some really cool cards that I was happy that I got to play with. I will say that I think that Skin Invasion is like a card. Like, yep. Is so crazy. Because in my singles event that I did, I would put it on something. They would attack me because they have to. And then I would go and I would kill it with the tap, destroy tap creature thing. Then I would get my biggin, and I was like, yes, we did work. So I really liked that. And I had a corrupted graph stone, which ended up being pretty awesome. So I was able to use that to run my three colors, which I thought was really cool. It comes in tap, but it's really not that big of a deal once you've already like cast some spells or done some things. You have maybe the other color that you needed in your graveyard. And then I also liked Sinister Concoction. That card seemed pretty cool. I had one of them, so I figured I'd just throw it in there and kind of run it, see what happened with it. And it was pretty nice, because I'd be like, okay, I'll pay one life, tap a black, and then you can, what does it do again?
Discard a card, and then mill the top card of your
library.
That's
right. And then you can discard a card and sacrifice it to destroy target creature. And I thought that that was pretty useful because then after we're kind of doing whatever you want to do for a bit, you're like, oh, that's a problem. Okay, I'll just sack this. So that was pretty fun. Two-Headed Giant went about as well as expected. I ended up the last round playing against a friend of the show named Arielle and her boyfriend. And that was pretty cool. It was kind of a close game, but we made some mistakes. My partner declared a blocker that I did not declare, and my thing in the ice died. And it had, like, two counters left on it. I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, I really wanted him to flip, but alas, no. And I did, like, a blue-black control build for that. And then my partner, Ben, he ran a red-white, like, aggro build, which wasn't terrible. It was pretty good. In both events, there was that Demon Hound thing, which is pretty awesome. I really liked that card too. But good times were
the one that keeps coming back from the graveyard.
Which one is it? It's Devil. I can't remember the name. Let's see. Wolf of Devil's Keep? Is that the name of it?
Oh, you mean the red wolf where you can discard something and it, like, does damage?
Yeah, I think that's the one.
Okay, because I kept having to deal with, I think it was a wolf, but it was this black creature that you could discard two cards and bring it back over and over again. That was fucking pesky.
Let's see. Yeah, wolf
fucking pesky.
Fucking pesky. Yeah, Wolf of Devil's Breach. When it attacks, you can pay the colorless and the red. And discard, it'll deal damage to target creature or planeswalker equal to the discarded card's converted mana cost. And I believe I did that once with, it was not Frenzied Youth. It's the one that has haste with all the peeps on it.
Incorrigible
That's
Youth?
That's it. And so I was like, discard that, take five. So that was pretty fun. But good times were had at the pre-release. I couldn't do Midnight. There was just no way in hell. I was way, way too tired to even entertain that thought. But some good cards, I think, have come out of this set, and so I'm just excited about being able to build with them. I don't know about drafting, because I seem to not be so good at that. But sealed, sign me up.
I played in a pre-release on Saturday. My pool was not very good. I actually took pictures of my pool after the fact and posted it on the Ladies on the Grind Facebook group. And it was pretty unanimous that the pool was shit. I think there was a possibility I could have gone Mardu, but it wasn't great. And so the most noteworthy rares that I opened were Thing in the Ice and Gitrog Monster. And Gitrog Monster actually counts as a horror. So when I first saw Thing in the Ice and I saw that they were horrors, I was like, hey, I could do a horror deck. I could do a bug horror deck. This is awesome. And then I had some other random horrors that I had opened, the Insectile Aberration thing that counts as a horror. There were a couple other things, and I was like, this could maybe work. The problem with Thing in the Ice is that you need at least 10 instant and sorceries to make it work, or so people say. And there's no real good green instant and sorceries in green. So it was like, so then it was up to blue and black to carry that weight. And I didn't really have enough in either of them, and certainly not very good ones. Like, I was just playing things just to play them. And so finally I just kind of dropped Thing in the Ice because it was just too much to make it work. And so I ended up going black green. And I had Sinister Concoction as well. I was very happy with that card. It was great for Delirium. I almost always had Delirium. I never really had to worry about it. I was very happy with the Gitrog Monster. It's terrible in Dredge, but in Sealed, it is amazing. Like, the engine, it just fuels itself. You know, when you're drawing an extra card from the sac ability, you're drawing, you know, the card per turn, it's very easy to just keep fueling it. And I definitely think that card might have a place in Standard. Jeff Hoogland, somebody had sent me a screenshot of his where he was like, he had a list of, like, what he's brewing for new Standard. And one of the things on his list was Black Green Rock. And I was like, like, oh my god, because the last deck that I was the happiest to play was an Innistrad Standard, and it was Disciple of Bolas, Desecration Demon, Thrag Tusk. That was the happiest I've been playing Standard in my entire life. And I was like, if we could possibly, like, get back to that, like, I'm fucking in. And so I don't know if that's gonna pan out. Like, I was going through Gatherer and seeing, like, what would be in a black green deck, and nothing really spectacular jumped out at me. But I could definitely see Gitrog Monster doing something in Standard. I was very, very pleased with it. I heard a lot of people had success with Westvale Abbey.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I lost to that card.
Yeah, I heard it was very scary. And I've also heard some people coming around to it in Standard that want to do things with it in Standard. So it was very, very good. My store had a lot of black-white. I didn't really see any blue, but black-white was everywhere. My friend Will was sitting in front of me during deck building. He opened two Avacyns.
Jesus. Hmm.
One was his pre-release rare, so it was all shiny and foil. And then the other, he opened in a pack. And somehow, he still only went like 1-4. He also opened Anguished Unmaking. Like, he had the black white cards, and I was like, how did you go 1-4 with this? I don't understand. And he was like, oh, I was trying to jam an extra color, and I just didn't really jam. I was like, what more colors did you need? You could have picked your nose for 5 turns and played Avacyn. Like, what? I don't understand. So I ended up not doing very well. I have this really bad habit of, like, building really safe decks when I play Seal. Like, I try to play just two colors, and I always seem to lose to, like, these 3-4 color YOLO decks. And I don't know if it's my fault for, like, not being more adventurous or, like, knowing when to do that, but it always really frustrates me when I lose to these really greedy decks, because the times that I've tried to be greedy in the past, I really, really lose for it. Like, I never get the mana I need, and it just always turns into this disaster. And so I can't help but wonder if maybe I need to change my thinking, or maybe it's just, you know, a variance and I'm getting paired against these colorful people. I don't know. But it just kind of irritated me a little bit, where I was like, you know, I did everything right. I had my bread. I had my two colors. I was nice and smooth, and I'm losing to just these four color weird decks, and it made me kind of sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it did feel nice to know that, you know, when I posted the pictures to the Facebook group, it was nice to hear people say, you know, I probably would have played black green too. And so, you know, it's nice to have that resource available. And I'm thinking about doing the pre-release, the new one on Magic Online, where you can do it as a league. Mm-hmm. And I might actually take a picture of my pool too, and I'll build the pool myself, but it's always nice to have a second opinion of you guys saying, what would you guys have done? And when your list looks close to mine, I feel a little bit better about myself. So for me, that's a really good learning tool. But otherwise, it wasn't bad. I really do like the set. I've seen some of the lists that people are thinking of taking to Baltimore this weekend, and I think they're really going to rejuvenate Standard. Speaking of rejuvenating formats, the banned and restricted announcement came out today, and we got some shakeups. Eye of Ugin gone. Sorry, Tron. So Eye of Ugin is banned. I think we all expected that something in Eldrazi had to go, and I think the toss-up was between Eye of Ugin and Eldrazi Temple, and it seems like Eye of Ugin was the bigger threat, so Eye of Ugin is banned. Ancestral Vision and Sword of the Meek are unbanned. We got some unbannings. Yay. So our friend Reed Duke immediately wrote a post about what Modern is going to look like after this. And it looks like that people are... So it looks like Eldrazi could still exist, but there is some discussion about the fact that Eldrazi might go back to the processor versions that we saw before Oath of the Gatewatch, with things like Wasteland Strangler, Blight Herder, you know, and being able to cast a Reality Smasher on turn four isn't so scary when you know, you're not doing turn two Thought Knotseers and things of that nature. So I think that was definitely a really good move. I didn't hear anybody complaining about the Eldrazi ban. Even the Tron players I saw were pretty mum about it. So I'm under the impression that it was a good move, and I'm pretty sure that Tron's going to survive.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I think they might have to tweak the deck a little bit, but I don't think they're... It's funny, because Reed actually said, you know, Tron is the type of deck that is resilient to all-out extinction, and I think that's true. So that'll be fun. But the interesting thing is, so they talk about Sword of the Meek and Thopter Foundry, and people were really quick to sort of pair these two together. And there was actually talk of them being really good in a mono-blue Tron deck, or like a blue-white Tron list. And Chris, you're our blue-white Tron player.
Yes.
It seems like you came out ahead with this news.
I'm kind of excited by this. I've been playing with a blue-white Tron Gifts build right now. And so I'm just kind of, I don't know, intrigued to see what else I can kind of, like, putz around with. So I would totally be fine with trying something out like that. Now that I've got some more reps in with the Gifts deck, I can see how it kind of works a little, you know, better. It's just odd to get used to different types of mana and what I need when and how we're going to get there. Because even with the Gifts deck, there's so many different lines of play that you could do that it's like, okay, well, I could do this, this, or this. There's so many fucking choices. It's just wonderful. So I could probably give that a try. If someone writes up a list, I could tweak it from there. So I like being able, like, with those types of situations to try to tweak something as I go.
Yeah, because how does it feel to be ahead of the curve?
Pretty awesome.
Because how many times have people sent you tweets and been like, blue Tron? Like, why are you doing that? Like, why don't you play red green? Nah. And you've stuck to your guns and you're like, you know what? This is what I like to do. I'm going to do my own thing. And now here people are talking and they're saying that mono blue Tron or blue white Tron is the way to go. So that's got to feel pretty good.
It does. And I mean, I do feel bad for my Tron sisters and brothers that I pulled out my 44, but I, you know, it'll be okay. You know, they don't really need I. There are other things that they can do to get around that. I think I used I once in Blue Tron, and it just didn't work for me. I didn't like that it didn't tap for any mana. It was just kind of just not very useful. So I went to trying Sanctum of Ugin, and that worked for a little bit, but it wasn't as consistent as I would have liked. So I just kind of decided to forego both of those. And I'm just ready to see what happens, because my deck doesn't perform poorly. I think it just sometimes has some crazy matchups, but I feel good about the changes that I made to it before I went to Detroit, and I haven't really been doing terribly with it online, and I'm trying to get as many reps in with it as I can, and working on this blue Tron deck, this blue-white Tron deck, so we'll see how it goes. I'm pretty excited.
You got 3 weeks to prepare for SCG Milwaukee.
I don't even know what I want to bring. Like, I don't, like, I'm so not sure. Like, part of me is just like, just play blue Tron, and I'm like, I don't know, like, maybe I just want to, like, throw all my cares to the wind and play something different. Because with this Blue-White Gifts Tron deck, like, I feel like I kind of get to come home a little bit. And I get to cast, you know, Sphinx's Revelation. Like, I was playtesting the other night with Christopher Preston, and I was...
Sphinx's Revelation.
Oh, yes. And I revved for 10. And it was just, like, everything right then and there. I was like, he's like, all right, you got it. I'm like, no, wait. Let me just do this at your end step, please. And he was like, we're going to win anyway. I'm like, that's fine. I just want to do it. Felt so good. It's been so long since I've been able to rev for anything more than like 3 or 4. So I'm all about it. Sphinx says rev with Tron. Let's do this.
Well, you sold me.
Hallie's mouth is watering. Like, yes.
So good. Love it.
I do remember that feeling of, like, I didn't play it very much, obviously, but I do remember that feeling of, like, somebody's trying to swing in for a bunch, and you're like, I'll take 9. Mm-hmm. And then, like, before damage, or just after you take it, you're like, Sphinx for 7, and it's like, And I just remember that feeling of being on the other side of the Revelation, and typically, whenever they get one off, you're just done. Like, if you even get one Sphinx's Revelation off, you're so ahead of the game that the other person just doesn't even... The other person just loses morale at that point.
And I love going to negative life totals. And coming back.
I remember being on the side of the Sphinx's Revelation, where you get one off, and you're like, I've won. Do you want to play it out, or should we... just stop here.
You're just like looking over your shoulder like, come and get me. You're just trying to catch up to me. Mm-hmm. So speaking of control decks, Ancestral Vision. It's not Visions. Everybody's saying Visions. It's just one Vision. That's all you get. Vision was unbanned to give the blue deck some life, because blue hasn't been doing so well since the Splinter Twin bannings. You know, obviously, with Eldrazi taking over. There have been some glimmers of, like, a blue-white control list, but nothing really approaching any level of, like, stability or dominance. And so they unbanned Ancestral Vision. You know, Hallie, what do you think about this? Like, do you think that this is enough to give blue a chance in Modern again?
I'm not really sure. The thing about Ancestral Vision is that, like, the reason why it's so good in Legacy is because you can cascade into it with Shardless Agent. You can't do anything like that in Modern. Obviously, Bloodbraid Elf, the sort of premier cascade card, is banned. Still banned. Kind of sad, but oh well.
Oh, rub it in, Hal.
But, it's a little slow. I mean, it is a very powerful effect, but it's definitely... one that you're going to get later in the game. So I'm not really sure about it. We'll have to see how it pans out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was also talk of Thopter Foundry and Sword being a win condition, like, for a control deck. You know, it offers you life gain. It offers a way to lock out creatures and burn decks. You know, Katie, what do you think about this? Like, would you run that combo in a control deck, or do you think it belongs in something a bit more dedicated?
So in control, I feel like you have to... So you're going to make a blue-white control deck... surrounding artifacts and then win with Sword of the Meek. I'm not convinced about this one at all. I feel like just going straight control and kind of doing the old school thing of nothing fancy, grind them out, may just be better personally. But this is usually not my kind of style of deck, so I'm not sure. I don't expect it to crop up and be popular, I guess.
Do you think it's something you might need to, like, see to believe?
Yes, I would need to see it in action, firing on all cylinders, and then maybe I'll be like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
Now, I have a judge question for you. So how does Snapcaster Mage work with Ancestral Vision? Do you just suspend it for 4 turns? Or do you get to cast it for nothing?
I gotta look up the wording of suspend. Without... looking into it, it can't be cast with flashback, because it says rather than cast this card from your hand, and since it's in the graveyard, I don't believe you can suspend it at all. I don't think you can cast it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I've never tried to... I mean, obviously, the only suspend cards I've played are Living End and Lotus Bloom, and you certainly can't... I guess you could Snapcaster a Living End, but I've never really tried to. But yeah, I was really curious about that, because I saw there was a sentence in Reed's post that said, "My firm opinion is that Snapcaster Mage and Ancestral Vision are two of the best cards legal in Modern." And I was like, oh, does that mean you can combine them? And I wasn't sure how that would work.
Yeah, it's kind of like... not very clear. I've never actually looked into snapping back a suspend card. But the quick gather ruling says that has no mana cost, can't be cast by somehow giving it flashback. So,
yeah,
okay. I don't think you can.
Looked like the judge blog says something about if you cast Snapcaster Mage and target the Ancestral Vision in your graveyard, it will gain flashback, but the flashback cost will be non-existent and therefore unplayable.
Oh, okay. So it gets flashback, but doesn't work the way you want it to work.
Wah, wah.
Well, that's interesting, because I've seen a lot of people on Twitter that were talking about Goblin Dark Dwellers. Like, so does that mean that you can't cast it with that either?
I don't believe so. Dark Dwellers says, like, cast without paying its mana cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so, because you can't... it doesn't have a mana cost.
Interesting. So it sounds like somebody's getting their parade rained down a little bit.
Maybe. Or I'm going to find out when this show comes out that I'm completely wrong.
Top page of Reddit, Katie Neal, judge is wrong.
Yep.
I'll downvote it if it makes you feel any better. I'll just hide it for you. So at the end of the post, Reed does a bit of an analysis, and he says, so where do we go from here? And he says that the best and most obvious decks seem to be Affinity, Infect, and Burn. So obviously not much has changed. He does predict, though, that Jund, this is bad news for Jund. He says, the unbanning of Sword of the Meek and Ancestral Vision is catastrophic. Not just bad, but catastrophic. And he says that he's not willing to take Jund into a field of card advantage-based Snapcaster Mage deck. So I personally am not sad to see that go, if Jund does see less play, because that's a bad matchup for Ad Nauseam. And he does say that if you're already playing things like Malira Pod or Faux Pod or Kiki Cord and Elves, to keep playing those decks. And then he says that combo decks could possibly be good right now, because if the format is slowing down, the best thing you can do is to kind of speed up a little bit. So that's good news for me. I'm just happy I still have a deck. I know that the Eldrazi Temple and the Eye of Ugin kind of opened up this discussion about fast mana and how fast mana is just bad, and that a lot of the bannings we've had recently have had to do with that. You know, we banned Treasure Cruise, we banned Dig Through Time, we're banning Eye of Ugin now, and they all have one thing in common. They let you cast things before you're meant to cast them in really egregious ways. And so people were lumping Simeon Spirit Guide in with that. And they were like, well, if you're going to do that, you need to get rid of Mox Opal, you need to get rid of Simeon Spirit Guide. And I was like, I'd have no deck. Like my deck would be completely gone. And if you think I'm insufferable now, ban my deck. I assure you, it'll be like 10 times worse. Like, you're not going to want me at your events. You're just going to want to, like, just carry me out. It's just bad news. But I'm really happy that my deck is still a thing. I am seeing some people say that they still think Simeon Spirit Guide needs to go. So I'm just hoping that doesn't happen. And so for me, it's just going to be back on the Ad Nauseam train for SCG Milwaukee. I still think Zombie Loam is quite good right now. There's a couple of tweaks that we can make that are not that were done purely for Eldrazi, but if they're not a problem anymore, we can do other things. So either way, both the decks I'm playing right now are still a thing, and I'm really happy about that.
Speaking of combo decks, I watched Gabby Spartz play Grishul Brand on her stream last week, and oh man, that deck looks fun.
You haven't really committed to a Modern deck, have you, Hal?
No. I mean, I'm going to be covering a Modern GP, so I have to learn how to play Modern at some point. So I immediately messaged my friend David, who's a big Modern player, and was like, hey, teach me how to play Modern. He's a big Coco player, so I may be experimenting with that in the next couple weeks. But I just want to play as many different decks as I can to really get a feel for the format and really see all the different things that can be done in Modern. And so when I saw Grishul Brand on Gabby's stream, it was kind of like what you said, Aaron. Like, it's the kind of deck that you have to see to believe, because you look at it and it's not really obvious how all the pieces work together, and it doesn't seem like it can be very consistent. But oh man, I saw her get so many turn 3 and 4 kills. It was really good.
Oh, man. It sounds like you've let Gristle Daddy into your heart. If you want to borrow mine.
Oh, no. I have the GP promos. I'm good.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm always happy to spread the gospel. So if anybody wants to, you know, it's kind of like some, you know, those people who keep the little Bible brochures everywhere. Just like, got one right here for you. Just spreading the word. So it looks like fun. It's just the problem is Goryeo's Vengeance are like $40 a pop.
Oh, geez.
And I'm just like, I don't want. If I could ever pull the trigger on those, I would probably play it. Because you're right. It looks fun as hell, and it's just right up my alley, and it's good stuff. Chris, you recommended an article for us this week from a young man who writes for cardhoarder.com, and I've actually been shopping through Card Hoarder recently on Magic Online, and I'm not just saying this because we're talking about them, but they've been amazing. Their prices are good. Their customer service is great. So if you are looking for singles to buy, definitely check Card Hoarder out. But this young man wrote an article called The Scientific Brewer's Guide, and I think that, you know, you do more brewing than we do, Chris. You've got Red, White, and Blurn and things like that. So what did you like about this article? What made you want to talk about it this week?
I really liked that he kind of just broke everything down about his specific brewing process, and it was just kind of nice to see things that were relatable to like how I go through and try to like brew something, or like where an idea starts to come from. And I like how he said, you know, these are the advantages to brewing in a competitive scenario, because there are a lot of people that can be naysayers and be like, well, why would you want to bring this wacky brew? You know, it's not a real deck or it's something, but you do have some really sweet advantages going to like a large tournament with something that nobody knows what you're bringing. And I've been on the other side of this too, where I was like, what in the fuck is this deck? And I have no idea what they're playing. And that does work to their advantage, which I think is pretty cool. You don't know how to sideboard against it. They don't know what you're doing. And they might not know what pieces are so key to your deck that they can't decide what to maybe use with their hand disruption to take out of your hand. Or, you know, if they're going to surgically extract something, what is it going to be? And I just liked how he broke it down into the four different steps that he kind of goes through about observing, hypothesizing, experimenting, and refining. And I've gone through all of these things with brewing my different decks. I'm kind of in the refining process myself right now with my Esper Spirits deck that I was working on, because Chris Preston was right. It was more of Orthos deck. It was kind of a mess. And everyone I showed it to was like, I see kind of where you're going, but then you kind of lose me a little bit. So I figured, okay, this is just another part in the process where I have to go back and kind of see what I want to really accomplish with the deck. And for me, when I go ahead and I want to start brewing something, I'll pick, you know, like with my Thopters deck, I was like, I just want to play Artificers. I don't care about anything else. I just want to play Artificers. I want to have a theme. And whether or not it ended up being really competitive, cool. If it just kind of happened along the way, that's totally fine. And I feel like even with that deck now, I could still play that in Standard. It only lost a few pieces. It's just a matter of trying to figure out now what I want to do about making that deck still be viable. And I like how he just kind of laid all those things out, things I already do, but maybe other people that don't brew, they could use this as a starting point to try to start brewing their own decks and kind of have a little bit of structure as they go through it, instead of being like, I want to play this Goblins deck, or I want to play a control deck, or there's a card I just want to build around. How do I go about doing this? And I just really enjoyed reading his article and looking at this Dumbledore's Army deck that he made. Like, I'm actually thinking of putting it together on Magic Online and kind of playing with it myself. Some of the cards I have, some of them I don't, but it just looked really, really interesting. And I like how he did break it down for people that are on a budget for how they can, you know, play the deck. It's all based around wizards. I'm totally all about that. I like that it has a theme.
Allie likes wizards.
Oh, yeah. I love human wizards. Best creature type.
And it has a theme. And it uses a card that I've always wanted to use, Profaner of the Dead. When that card came out, I was like, sweet. I want to do something with this. And I feel like it didn't, you know, get a lot of love. And that this is a place for, you know, maybe it to have a home. And this is a deck that he's been working on for quite a while now. And even still, he admits that he still has to refine it a little bit. And he encourages other people to put the deck together and see what they notice or things that they can add. And I just think that that's really, really awesome. And I've watched his stream before. He seems like a wicked awesome guy. And I just really enjoyed reading this article. And I really hope to see more like it, because I think that brewing doesn't always get a lot of a good rap sometimes, because there are people that have like a more competitive edge that may kind of poo-poo on it. But, you know, all those pros, a lot of them started as a brewer once, and it could take one awesome idea that you had that started as nothing. Maybe it catches on and it just becomes like a pretty big deal. And there are plenty of people that I know in my personal life that I can just see it in them, that one of these days they're going to be that person. And, you know, even me, I'm overwhelmed that sometimes people want to see my deck. I'm like, my dumb deck? You want to see this? You want this list? Okay. Be like, I guess. Be like, it's fun to play. And if you like fun, I've got it for days. So I would definitely recommend reading this article to anyone that wants to get more experience with brewing, or to understand Sean's process with going through brewing on his own. And yeah, I just thought it was a really fun read.
His name is Sean Abrams, for anyone who's interested. On Twitter, he is Brew Spy Magic Guy. That's a bit of a mouthful there. But he does talk about, I want to talk about his scientific method of brewing. So step one is what he calls observe, which is where you pay attention to the decks that you're seeing played at your local game store, look at a site like MTG Goldfish and see what the meta is, getting a feel for the meta that you're brewing for, and, you know, knowing what you have to put your deck up against. Step number two is hypothesize. That is where you're getting your ideas, you're brainstorming, you know, looking at new cards, seeing how well they work with older cards, imagining the synergies that you want to use and kind of the angle of attack that you want your deck to have. Step three is experiment, which is where you're actually playtesting. And so I think this is the part where I think people kind of lose it, or they lose interest in brewing, because if I understand this correctly, you're losing a lot. Like, mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily an indicator that your deck is bad, but like part of this playtesting is losing quite a bit. And so I think when people have this theory of like, well, I can play this net deck that's like, you know, that doesn't involve the most painful part of it, the playtesting. They're like, well, someone's already done that for me, and all I have to do is take it to an event, and I don't really have to suffer through that. And then step number four is refine, and he says that this is where most brews fall short. And he says that, you know, after your playtesting, you know, taking the results and then making changes to the deck. And, you know, to be fair, though, Chris, you know, you brought up a point about people being kind of funny towards the brewers. And I think there are also some brewers. And one thing I like about Sean's article is he doesn't shit on the net deckers. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the rivalry goes both ways. You know, you see some net deckers or some pros who say, oh, you're just a brewer, this is some rogue list. But you also see a lot of brewers that get kind of holy about mm-hmm. it, where they're like, you know, I don't net deck because I can sleep at night. And they get really into it, and it's like, I can look at myself in the mirror and know that I'm playing something original. And it's like, well, that's nice, girl, but you're 0-5, so let's reassess. And it was really nice that he didn't do that, where he was like, you know, net decking's just not for me. He's like, it's not bad, it doesn't make you bad, it's just not my thing. And like I said, I think the rivalry does go both ways, and it was nice to see that he didn't build up brewing by pooping on net decking. Mm-hmm. So I think we all know somebody, like, I think we all know one of the sacred brewers, as I like to call them, you know, where it's like, oh God, I lost to a net decker. We've all faced them. Come on now, where they get really pious and it's like, okay, girl. So, so Katie and Hallie, do you guys, I don't think I've ever known you to be brewers. Like, am I wrong in that?
No, I've never really been a brewer. And, I'm one of those people who, you know, obviously started playing Magic and started building my own decks because that was fun. You know, I was playing casually at first. And then after about 6 months, I got tired of losing with my brews and I discovered net decking and kind of never looked back. And I do feel like I'm missing a component of that. And, you know, the main reason why I play Limited a bit more than I play Constructed is because I feel like I'm not good at brewing. And even though I can sometimes pick up a deck that I've seen online and do reasonably well with it and make a couple adjustments to it, I feel like because I didn't build the deck myself, there are some interactions that it takes me longer to see, or it takes me several repetitions with the deck in order to really understand. And I think if I built a deck myself, I would know all that going in. I would obviously need a lot of repetitions to refine my deck, but it wouldn't take me as long to kind of figure out what its game plan is. So I really want to get better at brewing, and it's something that I've been trying to work at. I unfortunately don't have as much time as I would like to dedicate to it, but it definitely seems like a very rewarding process.
Yeah, for me, brewing is not fun. like, I never get the urge to just, like, sit down with a pile of cards and be like, what can we come up with today? I do definitely respect people who can do it because it's something I just can't do. But I do feel like I've gotten very skilled at tweaking decks for different metas. And I think that's kind of a skill, you know, in itself. And while I was reading this, I mean, I don't really read articles about brewing decks or, like, off-the-wall decks very much. And it just reminded me how I think a lot of, you know, competitive players are kind of like that. And somebody wrote an article on Star City a while ago, and he quoted Brooks' deck that he won States with this year in it, or last year, end of last year. And basically he was saying, like, even, like, a brewer from Podunk, Montana can win with this.
And I saw that.
Yeah. And it reminded me of that because I think a lot of people forget that for your meta, you need to be able to tweak decks. And that's part of brewing. I mean, it's not starting with something from the ground up and building it all, but you have to be able to identify what you can change and how to make the deck you're still playing work. And, you know, this person was obviously just, like, kind of poking fun at Brooke, but Brooke was like, dude, I won the tournament. Like, I don't know what else.
Yeah, Brooke was really sore about that. I saw it on Twitter. I'm like, oh, Brooke.
And so, I don't know. It just kind of reminded me that, like, there is this big divide between brewers and competitive players, and I think the game is a lot more fun when you combine the two. I wish I hung out with, like, more brewers because I don't get that perspective very much except from Chris, which is obviously always a good time. But yeah, I really enjoyed reading the article because it was just kind of a reminder that, like, you don't always have to be set in stone, and the majority of Magic players are brewers. I mean, I don't think the vast majority of us are just all net decking all the time. Obviously, that's who we see at Grand Prix and stuff for the most part, but, you know, I think all of the tabletop players, all of the FNMers, you know, the people that just want to have a good time playing the game are brewers, and I think more articles like this should come out.
I got burned from, there was one experience in my life where I tried to brew, and this is when original Innistrad came out, I tried to make Splinter Fright a thing. I can feel your judgment. I'm not hearing.
I just don't know what the card does.
Okay. That's fair. It's basically a really awesome card that lets you just sort of, its power and toughness is equal to the number of creatures in your graveyard. Mm-hmm. And during your upkeep, you mill the top two cards of your library.
That sounds like a total Aaron deck.
Thank you. And so I was in, it's actually the deck that got me back into Magic. I had not played Magic for like 10 years. And I remember going on the mothership just because, like, just to see what Magic was, where Magic was at. And Gavin Verhey had his reconstructed column and he had posted this deck list and I loved it. And I ran out and bought the deck and I ran out and bought a box of Innistrad and a box of Dark Ascension. And then Kibler had posted a list as well on Star City Games and I had just discovered Star City Games and I was like, I need to make this work. And I tried everything, and I took it to 1Ks, and I took it to 5Ks, and I just got my ass kicked. And, you know, that process, you know, that he describes as being experimenting, actually playtesting, was so painful, and it just really kind of put me off brewing, because I just had such a negative experience with that. And I also felt this sense of failure, where it's like, you know, by the time rotation happened, I still hadn't made it work, and it was like, well, fuck, I just spent 3 or 4 months of my life trying to make this deck work, and I ran out of time. You know, the set rotated, and it wasn't standard legal anymore. It sure as hell wasn't going to see play in Modern. And it just all around made me feel bad, where I felt bad as I was losing, and then I felt bad that I didn't do it in time. And that kind of put me off brewing, and I haven't really tried brewing since then. But I might give it a try again. It was just a really negative experience for me, and it's kind of burned into my brain.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get hung up. He said something about, like, it's my baby.
Yeah.
And I think so many people are, like, hooked on that. And it's hard to not be. I mean, it's something you put sweat and tears into when losing and building, but I think that's something that maybe holds a lot of brewers back. They're like, I'm convinced I'm gonna make this work, and sometimes it's like, why don't we just start over? Like, doesn't look like this one's going anywhere. You know, and then you get to brew even more decks, so you might as well.
And that's something to Chris's credit that she does really, really well. Like, I don't want to say that you lose well, because does that sound kind of mean? Like,
no, I don't think so.
Okay, that doesn't sound mean. No. but you do take those losses very well. Like, when I see you play your brews, you're able to shrug it off in a way that I'm not able to. Like, you're able to be like, oh, it's just, I'll just go back to the drawing board. And I'm so envious of that, because that was something, I don't know how to do that. And so for somebody like me, that made playtesting extra painful, was not knowing how to lose. Because I was losing a lot, and I was not able to do it well.
That's why I felt bad over the weekend. I'm like, I'm losing in these pre-releases. What the fuck? But like at F&M, I'm like, well, oh, well, you know, it's not a big deal. And I actually made a comment to Ben over the weekend. I'm like, sometimes I just want to win. I'm like, because I lose a lot. And I'm okay with that, because I figure it's all a part of, you know, playtesting the deck, seeing does this work, does it not work. And so I'm completely cool with it. But every once in a while, I'm like, I just want to, yeah. But then I reminded myself, I'm like, you know what? You took 11th place at that GPT, and that's okay. And there will be another one. And someday it'll be your time. And that's it's important to look forward to.
I think, you know, in closing, I think there is room for brewers in the community. And I also think we need them. You know, I feel like when we watch coverage, they get so much more love, or they get a different kind of love. Like, I remember when Zach Elsick was just kind of debuting Lantern Control, never mind what it is now. But at the time, it was new and fresh and exciting, and people loved it. But I remember that GP that he made that debut, and he was up against things like Splinter Twin and Burn. And regardless of what feelings people have against those decks, people were so stoked. They were like, we want to see this deck. This is amazing. This is, he's worked on this deck himself. He's worked on it from the ground up, and he's kicking ass. I remember there was a GP where some guy showed up with like a Maze's End deck to like a modern GP. I think it was a modern GP, was it? Might have been a standard one. But either way, people were like, what is Maze's End doing on camera? And it was like foiled out to high heaven, and people wanted to see that. And, you know, there is a segment of the audience that they want to see the Alliantrazis. You know, they want to see these crazy brews that they're going to come up with. And that's why I think that we need them in the community. They're just a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have a random shout out that I would like to give to the drink that I'm drinking tonight, because it's quite wonderful. I found out about it today while I was watching the Brewers game at work with my coworker, and I had never heard of such a delightful, wonderful product. It is called Henry's Hard Soda. It is made with cane sugar, and it does contain alcohol, but it literally just tastes like you are drinking an orange soda. And it is awesome. And I just wanted to share this with everyone right now, because I've had two. And they are very, very good. So you should definitely look for them. And they are brewed here in the great state of Wisconsin. And yeah.
I have something.
I can hear it in your voice.
I'm just very, like, excited. Like, I'm looking at the bottom of the bottle now. I'm like, holy shit, I've had two of these? This is wonderful. So if you can find this, you need to try it. It also comes in a ginger ale, apparently, but I love it when I can't taste alcohol, so I approve. Seal of approval.
Did you hear the way she said apparently?
Apparently.
No, I love it. Do we need to get like a sponsorship from them? Because the Heavy Meta crew, they've got Kraken Rum backing them. So like, we can do this.
That would be wonderful. They even have like a saucy like logo, and there's thumbs up and stuff on it. Like, I approve. Like, I was like, there's no such thing. And then my coworker's like, yeah, you should try it. And so she sent me a text a little bit ago. She's like, so did you have one? I'm like, I'm on number two.
Oh, man. Yeah, we could totally do that. Like, they could be, we're worth it. You know, when you see podcasts that like go mainstream, you know, they get things like Audible, and they get things like Squarespace and Bevel, that razor company. We can get Booze Company. And think of the ways that we could plug it. Like, we could be on the show and be like, you know, so Hallie, how did your GPT go? And you're like, oh, it was a two hard soda event. See, subtle advertising. Oh, we've got this.
To follow with the drinking theme.
Are you drunk too?
Not right now, unfortunately. But my local game store, every pre-release gets free products from their distributor for buying however much stuff from them per year or whatever. And this pre-release, we got stemless wine glasses with their logo on it. And so we always do like a bounty thing where if you're a a store employee or a judge and you're playing in the event and somebody beats you, they win whatever the free product is. So we're, like, giving away these wine glasses left and right. There's, like, kids, and we're like, it's just a juice glass. just put your little juice in it. So, not sure if we're going to do the wine glasses again. We don't have very many kids in our store. It's not, it's more, like, oriented for adults. But same. I enjoyed getting the glass. I was like, dude, I'll drink wine out of that all day.
How classy is that? Just have like a wine draft, like a little tasting while you draft. I mean, that's fancy.
Oh, that'd be cool. I need to get three more and just have like a little set.
In Bozeman. In Bozeman. A wine draft Bozeman. In Bozeman. Fancy, that sounds like a dream Jesus. Come true.
Yes, I love living in the lap of luxury.
Do you have cheese in Bozeman?
Yeah. We have some cheese.
They have cows, don't they?
We do have, like, a lot of cows, but they're all beef cows, so we're more of, like, a steak state.
Mm. Okay. And how many of those cows have you dressed? You're still doing halters on cows, right?
Oh, yeah. I've dressed, like, okay. Four.
Katie's like, hey, girl!
Good old Grouse, Huckleberry, and Herney. Those are our cows. That's
you
cool.
Know their names.
Yeah. They're, like, my little friends. They're cute.
Oh, man. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan or on twitch.tv/HalCanSan. And you can also find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. When I'm not haltering cows, you can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or at twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is CrypticCommandWithKs. Also, if you do have wacky decks, please do send them my way. I do like seeing what is on your magical brains.
Absolutely. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us at Patreon, patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. You can find us on Twitch, twitch.tv/thegfbracket. Our show comes out every Friday at gatheringmagic.com. And you can also find us on iTunes. So if you do love the show, be sure to drop by and give us a few stars and a review, and we will read it on the show. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.